Leaving the community.
I am. Thank you, Ellie. Yeah, thank you, Ellie. And thanks again to everyone that's helped us open the meeting by reading. I'll take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Warm welcome to anyone that's visiting us or come to us for the first time this evening. Massive welcome to anyone that might be new to Narcotics Anonymous in the room with us tonight. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. This is a speaker meeting. It is recorded. We'll go on our website when we're done. And I'm gonna let Ellie, the lovely Ellie, introduce our speaker tonight. So over to you, Ellie.
Oh, thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. I'm Ellie. I'm still an addict.
Hello.
One of the things I do, as I guess it's part of a service, my service commitment to this meeting is a GSR, is I look for people who I think would be really great speakers. Sometimes we have a difficult time getting a speaker, but I heard this person share at a meeting, and I was completely blown away by his message of experience, his experience, strength, and hope. That, and I was just in awe of how clear his message of recovery is, and how the things that he's gone through, I could really relate to. So with that, I will turn the meeting over to Tracy, who will share for about 45 minutes. All yours, Tracy.
Thanks, Sally.
Hello, everybody. My name's Tracy. I'm an addict.
Hello,
Hey,
Tracy.
hey.
Welcome to the meeting.
Yes,
Hi, Tracy.
thank you. Coming to you from the mile high city of Denver, Colorado, where unfortunately it's still snowing. So anyway, very grateful to be here. I'm extremely grateful for Narcotics Anonymous and the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous. Without somehow finding this fellowship and working steps, I truly believe that I would not be alive today. I won't share too much about my past. I will say this. I'm that kind of garden variety addict. Anything that would get me high, if somebody told me to take it, I would take it. I picked up when I was 14. I got clean when I was 46. So, and we always talk about, it takes what it takes. And thank God for that fear and desperation. I've been overdosing probably daily for a decade. And sometimes in hindsight, looking back, I'm like, I guess it just wasn't God's plan for me to die that way, And when I heard in my first couple meetings that using was now a choice, and that I didn't have to use even if I wanted to use, I can still remember how powerful that was when that addict grabbed me and said, just for today, you'd never have to use again. I remember I had no self-esteem, so I looked up at him and I said, "What did you just tell me?" And he said, "Just for today, you don't have to use." And I mean, those simple words were so powerful. And it's like nobody ever told me that I didn't have to use, but with this disease, driven by obsession and compulsion, there were a lot of days I told myself in the morning I wouldn't use, and an hour later I would be using. And that went on for, oh my God, years and years and years. We like to think we're controlling our drug use. But after doing a lot of step work through the years, the drugs were controlling me and killing me, like we talk about physically, mentally, socially, and emotionally and spiritually. I was lost, had no purpose in life, and that spiritual void, I was just dead inside. I didn't know how to live. I had no coping skills. I didn't know how to feel. And maybe it is true when we say nobody gets to Narcotics Anonymous by mistake, But excuse me. But I am grateful for this program, My clean date, I just figured I'd get that out of the way, June 14th, 2002. If I'm still alive and breathing and hopefully clean on this June, I'll be able to celebrate 22 years clean. And I owe that all to the people before me, the people came after me, the message of Narcotics Anonymous, secure in the love of the fellowship, like the book says, you know, and I'm in the fellowship and a part of the fellowship, and I feel that love from our fellowship and try to, of course, pay that forward. But you know, and I'm really glad I had a sponsor, and my first sponsor would always say, you know, things are not always yippee skippy, which we laugh at, you know, and I'm glad that people didn't tell me when I got clean that, you know, life was just going to be all great, because we don't tell people that. We don't tell the newcomer that. You know, we tell the newcomer, please keep coming back. You don't have to use. Get a sponsor, work on, work the 12 steps. It is the disease of self, it's the disease of perspective. It can also be the disease of isolation, you know. And I had so many issues when I got clean. You know, some of us are sicker than others. And I'll guarantee you, everybody listening, that I was one of those individuals that was sicker than others. You know, I had no hope. And when I heard that message of hope, such an amazing spiritual principle. When I heard that message of hope that I didn't have to use again, I thought, wow, this is just really something amazing going on here. I think I'd been seeking something in my life, you know, and I tried the other fellowship a while back, and it just wasn't for me. And when I walked into my first meeting, I really felt like this is home, you know, this is where I was supposed to be, you know, and that identification we have when we hear each other share, and the identification that we get when we read the basic text. I remember my first assignment was to read the basic text. And I remember thinking, how do these people know what I'm thinking, how I'm acting, how I'm feeling? You know, and I didn't understand that, but it was so powerful. And it was, of course, later I realized that the basic text is written for us by us, as is all of our literature. But, you know, I had 4 days clean when I walked out of a meeting. It was a clear blue sky. I walked out of a meeting and something happened. I don't try to figure this out or explain it, but I walked out of a meeting and I lost the obsession to use with 4 days clean. And I just knew I didn't have to use anymore. And I got to tell you guys, that was really scary. I didn't know what to do with that, you know, and I was already living in a lot of fear and desperation anyway. But I remember I looked up and it's almost like I had this out-of-body experience, like something got removed or lifted, and I knew I didn't have to use anymore. And I was like a sponge in the beginning. You know, they say take what you want and leave the rest, but I listened to everybody. I just absorbed. I started to learn to internalize what people were saying, that if I wanted to stay here, that I needed to start taking action, because it is a program of prayer and action, you know. And what I know today is God won't do for me what I can do for myself. And still today, my recovery is my responsibility. You know, I'm not responsible for anybody else's recovery. Although I do help others and do a lot of service, I am responsible for my own, you know. But if there's anybody new here, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, if you're new to the fellowship, I'm really, really, really glad you're here. You know, my experience, I had a home group at 35 days clean. I had a service position at that home group at 35 days clean. I had a sponsor at 35 days clean, and I also started the first time through the 12 steps when I had 35 days clean. I don't remember that, but I wrote it all down in one of my step working books. So a while back, I happened to read through that, you know, because we can forget where we're at when we get clean, you know. And you know, they always say never forget where you came from. And the one thing I will share with you guys that I've never forgotten is the self-hatred I had for myself, between all these defects of self-pity, self-judgment, self-loathing, and self-hatred. Oh my God, I've never forgot that feeling. And people told me, you know, just for today, if you stay clean, you never have to feel that way again with all that, you know, from getting clean up all the chemicals I was doing. But so when I started working the 12 steps, it just kind of came to me that, you know, it was divine intervention from something greater than me, because if I could have stopped thinking about using, I would have just stopped using. And I could never stop thinking about using until that addict told me that I didn't have to use, and was using was a choice. And that obsession somehow magically disappeared. You know, so when I started my first set of steps, it was easy for me to realize that something that I didn't have to understand, but something that took away that obsession to use, could possibly help me, you know. And I remember I made a commitment to my sponsor through that first year. I got a little complacent. I got a little squirrely. And I made a commitment to my sponsor, my first sponsor, that I'm going to work these steps like my life depends upon it. I know it does. And I'm going to try to work through 1 through 12 with no expectations, to just see what happens. You know, and when I would not want to do my step work, or would not want to do meetings or whatever, I would remember that commitment I made to him, and the commitment I made really through to a power greater than myself through prayer, you know, please God, help me stay busy in my step work. And I just kept writing, you know, because life happens. We all know that life happens, and life happens sometimes is real hard when life happens. I had 4 years clean. My marriage of 22 years was a disaster. I decided that I needed to end my marriage. My first sponsor said, you know, you're so miserable in that, you better do some soul searching. If you don't, there's a good possibility that if you can't find your way through this misery, that you're going to get loaded again. And it's like we say, pain, we're going to experience pain, but that internal misery I was feeling, in between having no self-esteem and no self-worth, I took that to heart, and I went through the process of my divorce. It was the first challenging thing I had in my recovery, 4 years clean. My kids were angry at me. Oh my God, it went on a year. I was working, and it financially hit me hard too, you know, but I kept sharing honestly in meetings. I kept calling my sponsor. I kept praying. I kept working the 12 steps. That's my foundation and grounding throughout my recovery, is I work a program, because I know even today was some time that my life depends upon it. But, and that was, you know, I got through my divorce December of like 2000, I think it was 2006. And I've never done this since, but I told myself, I made a New Year's resolution. You know, I said 2007 is going to be the best year of my life. And why I've never done that since is, 2 weeks out of my divorce, right into early January, with the help of another addict, thank God, I went to the doctor and got diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, people share in recovery, there are no big deals in recovery. And I know what they're trying to portray, that we can, you know, through our thinking, we can make those little things into a big deal. But getting diagnosed with cancer, for me, was devastating. I got angry. I got extremely scared again. You know, I was looking to God and blaming God, because I wanted my life to continue. And I just started to mentally get sick again. You know, I was finding freedom and relief through the 12 steps, because that's what it's about for me. It's about getting relief through the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And I was finding that relief. And I truly believe that if I'm working steps, I'm right where I'm supposed to be every day. And when I got diagnosed, I was in my 11th step. And I don't believe in coincidences. You know, when I step out of the way and don't run my life in my will and work a program, I truly believe that I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And that, you know, that 11th step was helping me to trust and live in faith with this power that was helping me that I still don't understand today and don't try to. But but I was, you know, in that step, and I remember that commitment I made to my sponsor, one night in prayer, you know, and to God to just help me to stay busy and help me to keep looking at self through the steps. And so I just, you know, the doctors told me, well, get your affairs in order. I had an ultrasound done. My stomach was pushed all the way around to my back. My spleen was 5 times the size and about ready to burst. It was winter. They told me, your work is done. In fact, the doctor made me call my boss in his office. Wouldn't let me leave until I did to take time off of work, because he knew from feeling my stomach that something tremendously was wrong, you know. And that fear of not knowing was just unbearable until I got the diagnosis, you know. But they told me I had to be really careful, had to quit driving. I drove semi-truck here for many years in Denver, and I had to quit driving because any bump going down the highway in my spleen could have burst, which, of course, then you internally bleed to death within minutes, and any fall in the ice. And, you know, so my life came to a complete standstill, and I was grounded. And the fear was unbearable. And it's what I know today about this disease, of course, is, you know, the disease somehow knows when we're vulnerable. And out it came to torture me for years. I struggled with cancer for 7 years in my recovery and didn't have to pick up over it. But I stayed grounded in self-honesty, prayer, meditation, and step work. And self-honesty with my sponsor, self-honesty with my friends, and self-honesty practicing that in meetings, telling people when they'd say, are you okay? I would say, no, I'm not okay. I'm very scared. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, my head was telling me I needed to use. I went to a deeper, darker place mentally, clean, than I ever did using. You know, I was planning my own funeral. Oh my God, I can't even tell you guys how horrible it was. But I made that commitment to get through the 12 steps and see what would happen. And I actually finished my first 12 step in the hospital while having chemotherapy. And as I continued on and went through that, they hit me with the hardest treatment that they can give a person, called hyper-CVAD, and that regime of like 7-8 different chemotherapies, you know, 80% of the people don't live through it, because people that don't know, chemotherapy kills all the good cells along with trying to kill the cancer. And I just walked through this for the next 6 months, 5-day in-house treatments, round the clock of chemo, 5 days every 21 days for 6 months. And I remember my doctor came into the room and he had a big smile on his face, and he said, your PET scan is clear. The cancer's gone. And I didn't know how to feel that. I just started crying. Like, oh my God. Because my head was telling me everything but that, you know. And I got out of the hospital that summer. That was the summer of 2007. I was just crippled, and I remember a couple months out of treatment, I had that thought come through my consciousness of maybe I should work the 12 steps again. I healed a lot the first time. Maybe I'll heal a lot again. And I called my sponsor up and said, "Well, I'm gonna." I thought I would start on the first step again and work the steps again because that cancer took it all out of me. My spiritual condition, mentally and spiritually, I was healing and getting better. I could feel it. I could see it in my life, and just like it took all that away from me because it was so challenging to go through. So I when I told him that, he said, "Well, by all means, do." And I worked. I dug right back into that step working guide. I love our literature, the how and why, the living clean. I have all the literature. I spend time, even still today, studying and reading our literature because it's such a powerful tool. And I dug into a first step again, and I just started cranking away at working a program. And then sure enough, I could feel myself starting to heal. Again, through the process of the 12 steps, every time I've gone through 1 through 12, a few more defects slide away, and I learn to practice a few more spiritual principles, which is really where the positive change comes from. But I worked through the 12 steps again, and then a couple of years later, we just came back from a vacation. I met this gal in recovery who I bumped into her at the literature table, and I wasn't looking for a relationship, and neither was she. We have been together now for, I think, 14 years. And there's no coincidence in me meeting her either, because she has two doctors in her family. Both her ex-husband, who's a good friend of mine, is a retired surgeon, and her sister, who's in the medical field, her husband, who I'm close with, he's still a practicing doctor. So I don't believe in those coincidences. Maybe God knew that I needed a couple of doctors to help me with my health. But I went back to the doctor. I felt a little lump in my groin. I'm like, oh boy. And they, biopsied, and the cancer was back. And I was pretty devastated again, but by that time, I made a conscious decision second time through. I'm like, I'm not going to live in fear. I'm going to live in faith. I'm going to live in my faith and my trust that what I did before I got to the other side of it and got to the other side of it clean. And maybe if I just keep doing what I need to do, that I can walk through this again and get to the other side of it clean. And I love our basic text when it says, when we stop doing what we need to do for our recovery, the recovery process ceases. And what that tells me is, if I stop working the 12 steps, the recovery process ceases. And as we always talk, the disease of addiction never ceases. It tries to work me every single day, So I truly believe that to recover and continue to get better, that I need to continue to do the work, which is what I've done throughout my recovery. But so here I was again. I heard that word chemotherapy. The fear started creeping in about the second, third day. I'm like, I'm not going to live in fear this time. I'm going to try to just take action like I did the first time. Start the 12 steps again. Continue to be honest with others. Continue to ask for help. And asking for help is a big one. It's like we say, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. If you stay clean long enough, things are going to happen, and eventually, you'll learn to ask for help. But I'm really grateful that I learned to ask for help through that process. As hard as it was, there's such a, it's like, why do we have such a problem asking for help when there's such an abundance of help with our friends in Narcotics Anonymous, and through that identification we have, there's always just this huge abundance of help. But So I went through another hard year of treatment. I lost my hair the first time, which I didn't lose the second time, so I guess that was one of the positive notes. I have a little ponytail now that I've been wearing for quite a few years that some of my friends kid me about, and I really started to understand the meaning of that third step through that second go around, take my will in my life. Surrendering self-will for me is the easy part, but the other part of that third step says, and my life. And I was there, and it really helped me to realize that, I have no control in a lot of instances. Control is an illusion that is driven by fear. Because there were a lot of mornings that I was getting treatment where I knew that there was a possibility that I wouldn't wake up. One time through through the second treatment, I had no immune system, which is very, very dangerous. Any germ or bacteria can ravage your body in a couple hours and actually kill you. I had no immune system. I got diagnosed with aspergillus. I had double pneumonia also. And the doctors told me, well, we're just going to give you some IV antibiotics because that's all I knew how to do and see what happened. And I made it through all that. And every now and then I get a new doctor and they look at my chart and I kind of laugh. I'm like, are you reading that? And they look up at me and they tell me, boy, you shouldn't be alive today. And I kind of smile and say, yeah, I know. There's been so many miracles in my recovery that I can't even tell you guys about. But this was an ongoing thing. And when I hear a newcomer or somebody sharing a meeting, I had a bad day or a bad week, I always try to get a chance to talk to them. I'm like, let me tell you about a bad 7-year period I had in my recovery where my life was so unmanageable that but I didn't have to pick up dope over it. I didn't have to use over it. Powerlessness to me is, I've had those times where I had to hang on to the walls to get to the couch, to the bathroom to go. And I knew if I didn't, I was not, I'd have to pee. And if I couldn't make the bathroom, well, that was going to happen on the couch. And that's that. I always remember that level of powerlessness that I was experiencing clean. We take so much for granted in this life we live, and when it all goes away, it really helps us with our perspective. But I just kept trucking on doing what I need to do. I kept writing, I kept sharing. Then the cancer went away again. And I was like, oh my God. And then they were talking about over here in the States, stem cell transplant is a big thing over here. And it's actually a blood trans a bone marrow stem cell transplant is done all by blood work today. And my brother, who's a retired state trooper up in Alaska, which is my home state, by the way, my brother was a state trooper for 25 years before he retired. And I always kid my friends, I wasn't talking to him because I'm the using addict and he's the state cop, but my mom had a couple of back-to-back heart attacks down here in Denver, and my brother flew from Denver down to Colorado here, and I knew I needed to make my amends to him, and I made my amends to him. And excuse me. And a year later, I got to call him back up and ask him, with the cancer and everything, I got to ask him, will you check your blood type or, have your doctor take some of your blood and send it down here to Colorado? They want to try to DNA type it to see if by some chance you're a match for my stem cell transplant. And, my doctor called me up and was all excited and pumped and said, your brother's a perfect 10 out of 10 DNA match for your transplant. And I think to myself, Thank you, God, for letting me make my amends to my brother. Because if I wouldn't have made my amends, the fear, I don't know if I would have been able to call him up, you know, and ask him for help. And it's funny, we weren't close for years, and now my brother and I are just tied at the hip. We're like, we should have been through all those years. We're younger brother and older brother. He's a couple years older than me, but, you know, we're really close, you know, because active addiction, like we all know, is hell on our relationships, you know. But, you know, so that was just definitely a God thing. I, before the transplant, I had a 2-month period where I had specialty doctors every single day. Before they do this, they want to make sure that you're healthy enough to go through it. I had my heart checked, my lungs checked. One of the doctors told me, boy, your breathing's in really good shape. Your lungs are in extremely good shape. And I think to myself, well, I don't know how that could be because I've smoked everything. I won't mention what, but you know, and I went through that process. And of course, then to make sure that you're ready for the transplant, they give you more chemo, total body radiation, which from top to bottom, they give you a pretty good dose of radiation to try to make sure that there is no cancer left in your body. And of course, then it's on to the actual blood transplant itself. You know, I have a different blood type today. I have a different DNA today, which is pretty amazing. But so moving forward a little bit, after the transplant, they put you on a ton of immunosuppression because I have two other diseases as a result of the stem cell transplant. One called graft versus host disease, which is when my body, when the stem cells of my brother start to realize they're in a foreign body and they will fight inside of my body. That causes another disease called scleroderma, which is hardening of the organs. So those two diseases are not active in my life today, but when they are, it stops your heart from moving, it stops your lungs from moving, and when those two diseases get really active, they of themselves can actually end your life too. But so they put me on all this immunosuppression, you know, and I gotta say, I live in acceptance and surrender. I don't want to forget to mention those two. I was put on 22 meds in the morning and 26 at night. And my doctors told me, if you miss these meds by an hour every 12 hours, you could be back in the hospital. You know, and for many, like I said, for many years, I was crippled. I couldn't do anything. The unmanageability was off the charts. But I kept writing. I kept praying. I kept staying honest. I kept reading the literature. I kept putting pen to paper. You know, I just kept doing the things that Narcotics Anonymous taught me how to do. And after the transplant, they told me I couldn't be left alone for the first 10 days, that I had to have somebody with me at all times. So my honey changed her schedule to the weekends, or my honey changed her schedule to work to working through the week. And I went down through my phone list in Narcotics Anonymous. I called like 55 people and asked them if they could come over and sit with me. And the only person that told me no was a friend of mine in Las Vegas who was taking care of his mom because his mom was dying. Everybody else just told me, you know, when you need the help, let us know. And that's when I really started to realize the power of the fellowship, you know. And I wasn't left alone. I had a whole group of men, including my sponsor at that time, who would come sit with me for 4 6-hour periods. And when one person would leave, another would show up. And I wasn't alone that whole time, you know. And I was, after the transplant, I remember asking my doctor, when am I going to get through this exhaustion? Because immunosuppression, you can't do anything. It's just Your mind will tell you need to do stuff, you know, all my responsibilities, but my body would, I had nothing left in my body. And then, of course, moving forward. So that's another reason I'm glad I learned how to ask for help early on, because, you know, I needed help again. And I asked for it, and the help was just God put all these people in my life to help me, you know, and I let them because I knew that I had to have that, you know. But, you know, moving forward after starting to recover from that, I remember I asked my doctor, well, when is this exhaustion going to go away? And he said, well, he was weaning me off the immunosuppression to see if my bone marrow was getting healthy enough that my immune system could support, you know, my body through the transplant. And he said, it's probably going to take a year, and it took over two more years till I got my strength back. And because I remember praying and thinking, all I ever want back is to be able to function doing the simple things in life, you know. And now it's been, I think, 7 years I've been off all the immunosuppression. The only meds I take today, I take a blood pressure med, a baby aspirin, and a statin med for my cholesterol, and then, of course, a bunch of vitamins. But I got off all the immunosuppression, which is another miracle. The percentage of people that get off immunosuppression after transplant is something like, I don't know, 0.05%. So there's another miracle that happened, you know, in my life. And and last January, here last month, January 20th, I was 13 years past transplant. And I got to tell you guys, if it wasn't for the things that I learned how to do here in Narcotics Anonymous. But you know, moving forward today, I'm 13 years past transplant. I know that without doing the things that I was taught to do in Narcotics Anonymous, I wouldn't be clean. I wouldn't be alive. I've worked through the steps a couple more times after that. You know, I have the usual problems because chemo destroys your joints. I have arthritis in my joints, my ankles. I have neuropathy in both my feet. As we talk about in the In Times of Illness meeting, you know, aging and recovery brings a whole new set of challenges, which is why I just went through another first step with my sponsor on grounding myself on the things that are happening to me physically. You know, but I'm turning 68 this summer. I'm happy. I'm real productive. I can work on my cars again and my RV, and I ride my Harley a lot. And I really have learned to live in my gratitude for every day clean I have. Because by all means, you know, and sometimes when I do get in my head, I remember that everything I'm experiencing today is a gold-plated luxury problem because I shouldn't have survived active addiction, and I really shouldn't have survived the things I've gone through clean in recovery. And I owe it to a lot of people in Narcotics Anonymous. I've had so much help from people along this path, you know, that reminded me when I was in my head that that power greater than myself is still helping me, that just continue to, you know, keep coming back and continue to write and continue to pray. And, you know, why I got good at using is I practiced it every day around the clock for 30 some years. And why I've been successful in my recovery is I practice it every day. You know, I don't take this disease for granted. I watch people that don't think they need a program, or I don't know what goes on, but I've watched people that step away from Narcotics Anonymous and it never turns out well, you know. So today I'm just tremendously grateful that I'm still here. I do a lot of sponsorship. We had a spiritual breakfast, first annual men's spiritual breakfast here a couple of weeks ago, and this I saw this guy that stood up for 10 days clean, and I went over to introduce myself. And I said, are you okay? And he said, no, I'm really scared. And I'm like, well, yeah, you're getting clean. We're all in that place. And then he told me that in a week he was going to go through treatment because he got diagnosed with colon cancer. And I think to myself, well, there's no coincidences. Maybe I was meant to be at this spiritual breakfast to meet this newcomer, to be able to be in his support group and share with him my experience. And since then, we've been talking every day, and I've gotten really close to him, and I told him, let me know when you go through treatment. If you need any help, I'll be there for you, so you don't have to walk through any of this alone, But I truly believe that some days I can see God's will for me. Some days I always pray for knowledge of God's will, whatever that looks like. Some days I can see it, and some days I'm not. But, in those kind of experiences, with those spiritual experiences, I truly believe that why I was meant to be at that spiritual breakfast was to bump into this newcomer and introduce myself, and to be there for him. Because, like we talk about, you stay clean, you work steps long enough, you realize it's not about you. Some of my life is about me, but most of my life is about carrying the message, being of service in any way I can, in and outside of Narcotics Anonymous. So, thank you for the people that are doing service to this meeting. If you're new or struggling, you are not alone. Remember, if you're struggling, you're only alone if you choose to be, so don't choose to be alone. We have a worldwide fellowship of people that are doing the same thing as me, staying clean and working a program. And I'm so, so grateful for Narcotics Anonymous, the message, and the people that God's put in my life. So I guess with that, I better be quiet now. So thank you for the opportunity to be of service. My name's Trace Aminatic. Thanks for letting me share.